Hello, Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Just Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is the afternoon of Wednesday, November 27th, 2024. Happy Almost Turkey Day for those of you who are celebrating. Got a bit of a lunchtime power hour shotgun podcast for some breaking news. Earlier today, the Colorado Rapids announced their end of year roster news for players whose options they were picking up, not picking up, players who were eligible for free agency, etc. So I'm going to talk to you about that. And then I got a few other news and notes and some offseason stuff to bring up here on my lunch hour. No rabbi today. He's got the kids out of school. He's prepping the brisket and everything. It is fitting that MLS had a major news dump on a Wednesday before a national Thursday holiday. It was going to be hard for Mark and I to record over the long weekend while we are away with our families. And by the time we get to the next week, then there's other stuff to obviously talk about. I am sick. If you could not tell, listeners, I've been dealing with a little bit of a bug. I got my flu shot. I got my new COVID vaccine. I have tested negative for COVID twice. I don't know why I'm getting a random head cold that has me sounding like I am a chain smoker in the middle of November. I'm dealing with that right now. Obviously, I inhaled a lot of blue smoke on the in the south behind the south goal at Widener Field on Saturday morning covering the Switchbacks final. So that probably certainly hasn't helped it. So I apologize for my voice and I apologize that we do not have Rabbi joining me here. But I've got about 25 minutes left in my lunch break and maybe 25 minutes left of this voice before that dies out. So let's get to it. First off, I want to give a massive congratulations to Colorado Springs Switchbacks FC, who are officially the 2024 USL Championship champions. They won the final at Widener Field on Saturday morning by a score of 3-0 over Rhode Island FC. Goals were scored by Juan Tejada, Jairo Enriquez, Salvadorian legend, and Ronaldo Damas. Yosuke Hanya, Rapids 2 lone E, did get a primary assist on that first goal scored and then was subbed out due to an injury. Absolutely fantastic performance, fantastic day, great atmosphere. Switchbacks have sold out more than half of their home games this year at Widener Field, so massive congratulations to James Chambers. Chambo, as the players and the staff like to call him as well. That's his nickname. Massive congratulations to Nick Reagan, everything that he's done down there from an ownership standpoint. Hogan, the general manager, did a really, really good job building this roster, even going back to the Brendan Burke days, which was the building up towards this. So first-year manager who had been an assistant previously, a roster that they had gradually grown and grown. Guys who are USL guys who are not necessarily going to who maybe have opportunities to move up to MLS, but they're there for a long-term project to try and win something there. Not unlike, say, you know, a 21-year-old, 22-year-old Nangalina, the winger from a couple of years ago, who was fantastic, but then ultimately ended up getting sold before they could win something. This was something the Springs needed from a professional sports standpoint. They are the City of Champions, as they like to refer themselves because of the connections to the Olympics. And now they are the city where they have a professional championship in the form of a USL championship. I hope that gets easier to say at some point. So congratulations to the Switchbacks. Widener Field, awesome. Switchbacks now have done the second biggest thing you can do as a USL team. I think the only other bigger thing would be winning an Open Cup where you beat a bunch of MLS teams and get some scalps along the way. So when we think about the USL Championship, we, of course, think Sacramento Republic, Phoenix Rising, Louisville City. In that next breath, maybe we would say a San Antonio, a Tampa Bay Rowdies. And now in that second breath, we have to include a Colorado Springs Switchbacks FC. They've done a great job with the community, with the club, on the field, off the field. They have a Salvadorian representation within their fan base, which I think is really, really fun and really unique at the USL level. And the only thing that was not wonderful about Saturday was the fact that the game kicked off at 10 in the morning. Had that been a late Saturday afternoon kickoff, a Saturday night, it would have been absolutely lit. Fantastic performance, smashing win, 3-0. It's way more fun than a 90th minute winner, and something that fan base can absolutely cherish and have forever now. So congratulations to them. I think Mark and I forgot to cover this last podcast. I don't know if the news had broken about this, but in any case, we now know that Wilfred Nancy of Columbus Crew won the Coach of the Year, and Chris Armas was a finalist for that, and he ultimately ended up finishing third in that vote behind Wilfred Nancy, who won the trophy, and then Tata Martino, now who's left Inter Miami, who finished second place in that voting as well. I am not surprised that Chris was a finalist for that award. I am also not surprised that he was comfortably third place on that list as well. This was a competition, I think, for a lot of voters between whether or not they were going to go with Tata Martino or Wilfred Nancy. Nancy in terms of a reward for what he maybe even did last year, what he did in the international competitions this year, and obviously continuing to build a very, very good MLS team. And Tata Martino, who obviously broke the points record with Inter Miami, but also did it with probably the most stacked, talented team in MLS history with, you know, basically a Barcelona retired team. And so I voted for Wilfred Nancy, just to be completely transparent. Had Chris Armas gotten the Rapids to finish in the top four in the Western Conference, he would have been my vote. I think certainly those last four games, losing those and then dropping further down the standings on decision day certainly hurt things for one Chris Armas, but deserving that he was a finalist, and hopefully he can build on that. And I think now he's getting some recognition, even going back to those who criticized him with the way things ended at New York Red Bulls. And I think if Chris Armas comes back with this Rapids team and finishes top three, I think he should again be a finalist for Coach of the Year in 2025. And who knows, maybe he wins it. Maybe I vote for him next year. I do want to say as well, we are in the voting period for the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame, and Chris is eligible for that in terms of what he did in his playing career. I don't believe as a coach he's officially eligible. So for those of you rapid soccer sickos who are looking for something to think about in this offseason before we get into the MLS offseason proper, starting on December 10th, I'll have some notes on that in a few minutes. You know, for those of you waiting on that, I would encourage you to go onto U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame's page and look at the nominees, who's eligible for it, in what roles as well, not just Rapids related. To be clear, there's some MLS former players, obviously some more national team focused players when we look at the women's game, and then I can't remember if it's influencers or what the separate category that like Grant Wall was eligible for that got him into the Hall of Fame last year or a couple of years ago posthumously. So that's something to think about. I think Chris is deserving in terms of what he did as a player. Off the top of my head, four Open Cups, one Supporter Shield, one MLS Cup, and then he also had a bunch of MLS Year Best 11s and a bunch of All-Star appearances as well. So certainly from a player standpoint, I would say Chris Armas is comfortably one of the top five, certainly top 10 MLS midfielders in that first decade of the league, certainly. I think that's a typical player if we talk about other Hall of Fames for other sports. That's a player you would typically think would get into the Hall of Fame. So we'll see what happens. That announcement could come at any time. I might be prepping you for this, and then nothing comes until February or March. I believe the induction is in April or May, so that's something to think about for you listeners on that front. But in any case, Chris, congratulations on you being a finalist for MLS Coach of the Year, and here's to you winning it outright in 2025. With that, listeners, we will move on to the news of the day. Earlier today, Colorado Rapids announced their end-of-year roster decisions in terms of their first-team playing squad. We will start with the players who had options for 2025, who the club picked up. First off, Captain Keegan Rosenberry, no real surprises there. And then also Oliver LaRoz, Nate Jones, who spent most of the year with Rapids 2, and then Calvin Harris. None of these were particularly surprising for me. Obviously, Ollie LaRoz would have been immediately automatic. Yes, Keegan had a bit of a disappointing season in terms of some of his stuff defensively, but first year captain, a big part of that veteran leadership group as well. You know, a reliable player at the right back position, and a, I wouldn't say a loud voice, but an important voice in terms of the locker room and being himself as well. So, you know, you're not gonna not pick up an option on your team captain. I will say that in terms of the duration of the rest of the contracts for these four players, this was the last option year for Keegan Rosenberry and Calvin Harris, so that's something for the Rapids to think about. Keegan will be 31, I think. Maybe, let me check this. Keegan's birthday is December 11th, so I suppose before, if we're talking about whether or not the Rapids would want him back for 2026, he will be 32 by the time the 2026 MLS season kicks off. So that's maybe something to think about in terms of what you wanted to do from an extension. For Calvin Harris, 2024 was unquestionably his best season as a player. 4 goals and 3 assists in 1,500 minutes played. That's the most minutes he's played in any of his 4 years in MLS, and then the most goals. He's never gotten more than 1 goal in a regular season, and he matched the assists that he would have had in 2023. And he did that while still probably having some games where I think myself, Rabbi, and a few other people in the Rapids community would have argued that he should have started over a Jonathan Lewis, over an Omir Fernandez. And so I think if he builds on that in terms of if he grows as much from 2024 to 2025 as he did from 23 to 24, we're looking at a player who's probably 10, 12 goal contributions that would be absolutely fantastic. Certainly a regular starter at that right winger position. We do know that the Rapids are probably targeting a winger to complement Kevin Cabral. So we'll see what that means from a positional standpoint. But if Calvin builds on that and has an even better 2025, he's probably thinking, hey, I could go back home to England and probably get some bites from an MLS, from an English championship, or certainly a League One team. And that would be a player who I think you would absolutely want to keep around as, I would say, an important like middle tier block and middle tier building block player on your roster. Certainly not an automatic starter, but the first attacker that you would want off the bench. So something to think about there, but absolutely no question that these 4 players should have been brought back. Nate Jones did spend most of the year at the Rapids 2 level, and while Rapids fans who maybe weren't watching Rapids 2 or certainly weren't going out to training, you didn't necessarily see much of him. I should remind you, 6'4", left-footed center backs do not grow on trees. This was his first year playing professionally. He did have some times, Nate Jones did, with Vermont Green Rovers one summer when he was in college as well. And so I think he's grown and caught up to the game from a speed and a physicality standpoint. I would imagine he starts preseason with the first team with the goal of maybe contributing to the first team or being one of those bench center backs like how Mike Edwards was, maybe. But I think absolutely the Rapids deserve to give all of their draft picks, including Kamani Stewart-Baines and Wayne Frederick from this past year, time in order for them to develop. And if that means Nate needed a full year, 2,000 plus minutes at the Rapids 2 level in order to become the best version of himself, that's worth it. 6'4", left-footed center backs are really, really hard to find. We'll move on to the players who the Rapids ultimately ended up not picking up options on. Those were veteran center back Lolas Abubakar, backup third string goalkeeper Ethan Bandry, Kevin Cabral's twin Remy Cabral, who spent most of the year on loan at Phoenix in the USL, and Michael Edwards and Sebastian Anderson. I'll start with Bandry. You know, he was a Rapids 2 goalkeeper who I think filled a spot and a necessary role in training after Marco Ilicha was sent out on loan to Europe and then ultimately transferred permanently. I trust Chris Sharpie at that position. The Rapids have Adam Beaudry if they're looking for a young goalkeeper to do a lot of work in training. And I imagine if Bandry wasn't picked up, that's not necessarily a player who Sharpie thinks is worth investing in terms of that role. I think the Rapids, for their third goalkeeper, they go in one of two directions. They either bring up another young goalkeeper to tandem with Adam Beaudry, as Beaudry maybe gets some interest to go somewhere else, not permanently, or they bring in a proper veteran with some MLS experience to be a proper safety valve for, Zach Steffen injury insurance. I do think we're at the point where Beaudry, who spent multiple years getting plenty of minutes in Rapids 2. I don't think that going back and getting significant minutes in Rapids 2 is a useful exercise for him. And while training with first team players, being with Chris Sharpie every single day, learning from Zach Steffen every single day has many positives to things for Adam Beaudry, I do think at some point he needs games. Now, is that a loan down to switchbacks? Is that somewhere else in the USL Championship? I think there's plenty of USL Championship teams, not necessarily the switchbacks. Christian Herrera is an absolute monster at 6'7", was fantastic in the final and the semifinal for switchbacks. But I think there is a USL Championship team out there that Adam Beaudry walks into and is competitively the first choice goalkeeper on day one. We also could see a situation where maybe Beaudry in 2024 is getting his passport stamped, like we saw him go out and have that training stint with Arsenal. Are there a few other situations there? Is there a lower level, like a Scandinavian, maybe English League 1, Bundesliga 2 tier, to where he could get a short-term loan or an opportunity for a training stint or to get some actual competitive games? I'm just spitballing here. good luck to Ethan Bandry. The third choice goalkeeper spot will either be filled with another young guy who Sharpie will take a flyer on, or it'll be another veteran that will be a safe backup, a safer backup for Zach Steffen. I will also say that every single time I've spoken to Sharpie and other people in and around the academy, the Rapids are very confident in terms of their goalkeeper pipeline. They had a bunch of guys called up in this most recent window for various youth USMNT levels as well. Campagnolo is the one name that I'm constantly hearing about. Zachary Campagnolo, and he was called up most recently to the U19s, and he is a 2007, and so he's 17. He will turn 18 in March. So I don't know off the top of my head that the Rapids would eagerly fill that third goalkeeper slot with a second homegrown goalkeeper, but I would think an absolute minute. Zach Campagnolo is probably on an academy deal and playing regular minutes with Rapids 2 next year. So we'll see what happens at that goalkeeper position. Not too shocked that Remy Cabral was not picked up either. I thought he did do some good work when he was on loan in the USL Championship at Phoenix Rising. He played in 22 games, 7 goals, 7 assists, about 1,200, 1,300 minutes played. The Rapids have a really good idea of what the USL Championship is and how that translates to them, what you could do at the MLS level. Remy Cabral is 25 years old as well. So I think if he had absolutely balled out at that position, given his age, maybe we're looking at a little bit of a different situation. But look, the Rapids have Rafael Navajo. They're really, really happy with him. They're not going to give minutes to Remy Cabral over Darren Yapi if Yapi's not getting a loan opportunity to start and get more minutes in the championship than Remy would have. And they're looking at bringing in another winger anyways. They like Calvin Harris. They think he's a young player with potential. Same thing for Omir Fernandez. Same thing for Kamani Stewart-Bain. So at that point, at that age level, you either have to be significantly outperforming your competition or significantly helping the team win games. Otherwise, you are holding up a spot for a younger player who could grow into something more, or a player that the Rapids could upgrade in that position as well. As disappointing as that is to say, given that Remy was so much fun in Next Pro with Rapids 2, as fun as Rapids fans had to maybe fantasize about Remy Cabral doing like a Freaky Friday swap with Kevin when Kevin Cabral was struggling, or even the two of them playing together on the same pitch in MLS play. We'll touch on Lalas Abubakar, Michael Edwards, and Sebastian Anderson, all of whom the club says that they are in discussions with. The Rapids were probably never picking up that option on Lalas. Lalas was making over $700,000 for what he is right now as a veteran center back, closer to 30. That didn't necessarily make sense. If Lalas wants to come back at, say, a two-year plus a team option at $500,000, I probably have no complaints. If he was making $400,000 this year, I don't think you would have heard anyone complain about Lalas Abubakar's contribution. But, you know, good on him these last 2 years with the team option to get a nice pay raise and get his money, certainly. But it doesn't make sense for the output that he's bringing and the probability that the Rapids are either signing a center back to properly replace Moise Mambitsno, or that they think they have something in Michael Edwards for the near future for Lalas to likely be the first center back on the bench to be making that amount of money in the salary cap era. Lalas is happy here. I know he's got respect with an MLS. I don't know that an MLS team right now, if you gave them the option to pick up Lalas's option at 700, maybe almost $800,000, that any MLS team is taking that unless they're very, very desperate. So I think Lalas is happy here. I think the club wants to bring him back. Can they negotiate down a pay cut for him? Edwards and Anderson are a bit of an interesting situation. Sebi was on $150,000 this past year, and Michael Edwards was on $130,000. And I have to imagine the team options that they had would have been naturally, most team options come with a slight pay raise. I don't know off the top of my head. I recall an MLS player getting a team option and that including a pay cut in it. And there's a possibility it could have stayed flat or relatively flat. So I have to imagine Edwards and Anderson had for their team options for 2025 were getting them at or very, very close to that salary that puts them over the threshold to be on the supplementary roster, which means their pay raise would have had them automatically have to take up one of the 18-19 MLS senior roster spots, which I don't know that either of them are ready to do, given it's not clear to me that either of them go into 2025 being a starter. And there's a very real, maybe even more likely scenario they start the season on the bench. So I think it's understandable from a club roster kajiggering standpoint that they would decline those options because they want Anderson and Edwards back, but they want them back if they're in the supplemental roster spots. So in the bottom 10, bottom 12 roster spots, and having the flexibility behind that for them while still holding on the homegrown tag as well. So I imagine they maybe renegotiate, maybe restructure their deals where they're at or close to what their salaries are at, but maybe then delay some of those pay raises that would then get them into occupying a senior roster spot. And hopefully by that point, with both of them being 22-23, that then by the time, you know, if they were to elevate their play and then work their way into being starters or at least regular first guys off the bench as well, that would then warrant them occupying the senior roster spot and then being compensated accordingly with that. I think the one thought there is, you know, Anderson's the one homegrown from that age group who still, you know, who signed a homegrown deal, who's still with the first team, who is still kind of waiting to break in to the first team. If we talk about Cole's already made a big money move to Europe and then gotten his pay raise, you know, he's making $850K. Sam Vines is there as well. Adam Beaudry's a little bit younger. Darren Yapi's a little bit younger. Abe Rodriguez has left the club. And so I have to imagine there's some frustration from Sebi's standpoint that he's still around all the guys that he would have come up with in the academy, but the rest of them are playing regularly. I forgot about Ollie Larraz, including that as well, though Ollie's on, I think, closer to Anderson. I think Ollie's definitely under 200K in terms of his compensation. So I have to imagine that's a little bit frustrating. And I've kind of, you know, I've banged this drum for, you know, a few months now that if that's the case where, you know, Anderson is seen as a right back and sometimes a left back, and Keegan Rosenberry is your captain, you're not benching him for a significant amount of time anytime soon. You just brought in Reggie Cannon, who can play at both the left and the right back position, and you brought back Sam Vines, and Sam Vines is making 800K as well. Those are three of your fullback positions. And so it's a good thing that the Rapids had Sebastian Anderson in case something happened to two of the three between Vines, Rosenberry, and Cannon. But understandably, you know, if the three of them are healthy and the three of them are playing well, Anderson's probably an unused sub more often than he isn't. And so I have to imagine, just like what I said with Adam Beaudry, that Sebastian Anderson right now, there are multiple USL championships that would upgrade their right back position if Anderson was on their team, where he would walk in and immediately be the starter for them and play 20, 25 plus games, 2,000 plus minutes, and grow as well. What would that look like from a compensation standpoint? It'd probably be a little bit of a pay cut, but he's probably going to a market where rent's a little bit cheaper than it is in the Denver metro area right now. So that's something to consider. And are there other MLS teams maybe to where they think they could get more out of Anderson going in a little bit of a younger direction? San Jose is probably going young and playing a bunch of homegrowns. Anderson could fit into that environment. Now, I think Anderson, if he does go to another MLS team and start, are they finishing better than seventh in the Western Conference? Are they making a run in Leagues Cup? Are they in a position to finish fourth in the West with a month to go in the season? Probably not. It's probably Anderson going to a team that's less good on paper than the Rapids right now. But so, you know, I've been free Sebastian Anderson for his own development as a player in many ways. And I wonder how Porik sells the long-term vision to Anderson after so many years of sitting behind Keegan Rosenberry, who's not going away next season, and how Armas keeps him bought in, given that the other homegrown kids are getting minutes regularly. That's something that I'm thinking about. And to say all of that, given what Sebi did under Chris Little last year, I should say at the end of 2023, getting so many minutes and doing really, really well with the few opportunities that he got. And I think we could say similar things about Michael Edwards, albeit with less of the sentimentality because Edwards isn't a Colorado native, but, you know, he finally got that start in, I believe, the St. Louis game, did very, very well with Lawless unavailable, scored that goal against Sporting Kansas City. Good young player, but also he's been with the team for a number of years. It's not useful at this point for Anderson, Beaudry, Edwards to go down and play with Rapids too. So it's okay, play and be around the first team, but not necessarily get minutes. What does that look like? What does that look like financially long term? What does that look like in terms of their growth and their development if they're not playing at least 1,000 minutes in an MLS regular season? I think the Rapids want both of those players back. I definitely think that they see the potential for both of those players to turn into MLS starters. You know, what do those negotiations look like? I don't think any of them are formally eligible for MLS free agency off the top of my head, but is there a USL team that reached out? Is there an MLS team that maybe thinks, you know, hey, if you come to camp and you play well, we think you could get more minutes with us than you did with the Rapids last year? If I had to guess, I think all three of these players come back with the Rapids unless a USL championship team comes in and snipes one of the two younger players. I don't think if Edwards and Sebastian Anderson re-sign in MLS, I think it's staying with Colorado. And I do think Lalas Abubakar works out a sweetheart deal with a little bit of a pay cut meeting in the middle like Danny Wilson did back in the day. And so I think those three players are back with the team. I don't know where Ethan Bandry goes. There's certainly a next pro team that would take a flyer on him. I think Remy Cabral maybe goes back to France, albeit a lower division. Absolutely could see a USL championship team making him an offer as well. Last player that we're going to talk about from a Rapids team option standpoint is Jonathan Lewis, who is eligible for MLS free agency. I believe this is the first offseason to where Johnny will be eligible for free agency. So my understanding is he is talking with the Rapids front office, but certainly other clubs could reach out at any given time that they wanted to. If they were to make him an offer once that free agency window starts, he's open for business. He could sign with anybody at any time. I think everyone in the clubhouse at the Rapids certainly respects Johnny and appreciates what he has given to the club over the course of his time here. He was a really important part of the team in 2021. And yes, he can be streaky. Yes, it can be injury prone. But when Jonathan Lewis is on and feeling himself and playing well, he's probably the second best winger on this team behind a fully healthy and up to speed, pun intended, Kevin Cabral. So we'll see what happens there. I think a change of scenery could certainly do Johnny some good at this point. And as I mentioned, just with the same reasons that Remy Cabral doesn't come back and the Rapids are looking for another winger, they're really young at that position. And so you either have to be significantly outplaying the players at that position. You have to be helping the team win games. Otherwise, you are holding up the short and long-term development of players that are younger than you. Lewis is also 27 years old. You know, he's from Plantation, Florida. Originally, he spent some time in the Chicago Fire Academy. It might have been the reserve team. Let me look that up. Jonathan Lewis was a part of the Chicago Fire youth setup from 2014 to 2015, according to his Wikipedia page. And I think that was it, because then he was at Akron in 2016, and then he would have made the move to Bradford City as well at the youth level. So, Jonathan Lewis played with Andrew Gutman at that time when he was at Chicago Fire. Andrew Gutman is back in Chicago with the Colorado Rapids. So we'll see what happens. I could see him going to one of the Florida teams as well, given the roots that he has there. I would not begrudge Johnny if he were to get more money for 2025 than he was making for the Rapids in 2024 going to another team. And I think it would be a very pleasant, like, thank you for your service, all the best, unless you're playing against the Rapids kind of a situation if he were to leave. If I had to just guess a hunch right here, I would say Jonathan Lewis is not back with the Rapids in 2025. Oh, there is one other Rapids related player who I forgot to mention. Miguel Navarro, who you don't remember because the Rapids traded for him in the Andrew Gutman trade, and then loaned him to Talleres in Argentina for him to get regular minutes ahead of playing in Copa America with Venezuela, and that happened after the Rapids brought back Sam Vines. He is still on loan at Talleres. They have four games left at time of recording left in their season. Their season ends on the 14th of December, and Talleres still has the option to purchase on that. I don't know if there's a deadline on that, if that's a deadline that is at the end of the Argentinian season, or if that's like before the Rapids report for the start of preseason, or maybe that's the end of the calendar year, December 31st. I'm not sure on that, but that's something to look into and take into account. He's played very, very well with Talleres. He seems to be really liked there. He's played 33 games total, 2,650 minutes. He's got 3 assists, 6 yellow cards. He does have 1 red card, which was a second yellow card. Or no, I'm misreading Transfer Market right now. He has 1 red card that was a second yellow and then 1 straight red card. But in any case, 16 games in league play. He played 10 games in Copa de Liga. 33 games played, 2,600 minutes played, you know, given that he was loaned after the start of the year. So he's been really, really good for them. Whether or not they want to pick up that option, I don't know what that valuation is at. But he was good for Venezuela. He's been good for Talleres. And if the Rapids can make a little bit of money, that's probably a good thing. I don't think the Rapids need a fifth fullback at this point. Whether or not the Rapids think that he's better than Sam Vines, given how much of an up and down season and mostly down season that Vines he had this year, I think is a good question. But that's something else to look out for. So but we'll look to see. I'll certainly be paying attention to the the rumor mongering and gossiping whispers that come out of Argentina to see what happens there. And hopefully we'll get a resolution on that, so we know whether or not Navarro, who you don't even remember and you haven't even seen play in a Rapids shirt, whether or not he's actually joining the Rapids for preseason in ways that he didn't last year, because we were supposed to talk to him on media day and then he was unavailable conveniently as the weekend prior the leak started that Sam Vines was coming back to the team. I think that does it for Rapids roster news. So I do want to talk about some off-season dates. So for those of you who are looking for something to pay attention to that isn't the MLS Cup playoffs, which, by the way, has been bonkers as well. I still haven't paid. Rabbi and I just continue to be wrong, other than the LA Galaxy being good. Seattle ended up beating LAFC, so I'm probably sticking with Galaxy winning MLS Cup. But the MLS Cup playoffs is the opposite of chalk. Upsets abound. Underdogs are the new overdogs. Apparently, it's chaos. That's why we love it. That's also why it's completely not predictable. And you shouldn't pay attention to people with podcasts who try to sound smart and think they know who's going to win that thing. Okay, so December 10th is the first date that I want to have you all circle on your calendar. That is the day of the CONCACAF Champions Cup draw. That is also the date that MLS will release the expansion list for players who will be eligible for the MLS expansion draft. San Diego FC, who are coming into MLS next year, will get to pick 5 players from the other 29 teams in MLS. So let's start with the CONCA Champions. The draw is really, really confusing, and CONCACAF, on the press release that they put out for this on November 7th, doesn't give us a whole lot of details. There's a pot situation in terms of the draw for the first round, and that precedes the round of 16. The Rapids right now in the CONCACAF rankings are 31, and every single team above them is either a first division Mexican team or an MLS team. There's a bunch of stipulations for other stuff and ways in which teams can get a first round bye, or will be seeded in that in that first round before the round of 16. The Rapids are not that, obviously, as the third place League Cup finisher, but in all likelihood, the Rapids will be at or near the top of that pot, what CONCACAF is calling Pot B, and they will play one of the teams ranked above them that is in Pot A. As of right now, and this could change depending on how things shake out with the CONCACAF rankings, with what happens with the Caribbean Cup champion, and then also the MLS Cup champion, but in all likelihood, listeners, the Rapids are playing I would guess a Mexican team or a higher seeded MLS team in their first round, but maybe I'm misinterpreting that. We'll see what happens. So that is on December 10th. That is live streamed on CONCACAF's channels. Will be available on YouTube. I assume Twitter X will have a stream available as well, and that will be at 5 p.m. Mountain Time, and that'll give us about 2 months time ahead in terms of knowing the windows in which the Rapids are playing in the month of February in that first round, and then also who the Rapids are playing. So we'll see whether or not we're going to see some warm weather on a random Wednesday night in CONCACAF. And then there's the expansion list, which MLS will release. We don't yet have the full details public. That probably means that the clubs know it. MLS just hasn't issued that press release. But in all likelihood, listeners, there will be around 10 to 15-ish spots that MLS teams can auto-protect their players, and then likely there'll be other stipulations, Generation Nidas and homegrown kids who will be automatically protected as well. I'm not super worried about the expansion draft from the standpoint of the Rapids losing a player. This is probably the deepest expansion draft that has ever existed, given how many teams there are in MLS and how many good players all of these teams have. I do not see how Inter Miami, with how few homegrowns they have on their roster and how many talented younger players that they have, and given that they're going to need to protect Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez, etc., how they're not going to have a really, really good player who's available for selection. So, you know, the Rapids are going to have 5 to 7 players homegrown-wise that are automatically protected. They're going to have players that they're probably open to leaving unprotected if Lal Subhubakar hasn't declared that he wants to go into reentry to try and have a team select him in reentry. If San Diego were to take Lawless, they would have to be taking him at that option. Do I think San Diego FC, in their first year in MLS, wants to have Lal Subhubakar on their team and making $800K? Probably not. Do I think San Diego FC, who absolutely could afford the 50% of Kevin Cabral's salary on their books, wants to have Kevin Cabral taking up one of their 3 DP slots in their MLS expansion year? Probably not. So I would not freak out about players being left off the Rapids protected list and being eligible and available to San Diego, freaking out about them taking him, given how many other teams have more depth and depth that will not automatically be protected. And I think San Diego definitely is going to want to be looking at MLS veterans who are starters in their first year. If they want to take Wayne Frederick, who played like 300 minutes for the Rapids this year, and have him to occupy one of their roster spots, by all means, you can have Wayne Frederick. Great young player. I think San Diego will be going for more value. I think the Rapids will have enough homegrowns and enough GA players who are automatically protected and have their important players and their core protected to where it's okay if they leave Jasper Lofelson or Kevin Cabral unprotected. I do not think that San Diego is taking them. Also, keep in mind, MLS teams only going to lose one player. So if a Rapids player is taken, it's not like San Diego could screw the Rapids and take 5 players from their list. And also keep in mind, there's 29 teams. 24 teams aren't losing anybody. I bet the Rapids are one of those players. That said, the expansion draft will be the following day, Wednesday, December 11th. So pay attention to that on MLS channels. And then the next thing that we'll have officially on the schedule is December 20th. That is the date of the Super Draft. Combine and stuff will be taking place in the days, weeks, week prior to that. As of right now, the Rapids have their natural first round pick. That's pick at number 16. And then they also have LAFC's natural first round pick, which LAFC traded to Vancouver, and then the Rapids acquired trading Ralph Prisso as well. So that Mark Anthony K trade just keeps paying back in spades in terms of the Rapids getting Ralph Prisso, flipping him to Vancouver, and then getting a first round pick for him as well. That is obviously late in the round. Let me look up to see when that is based on the supporter shield, now that we know that LAFC is not winning MLS Cup. LAFC finished 3rd in the supporter shield standing, so that'll be what, 2nd to last, 27th, 28th, I believe. So they've got a late first round pick, they've got a middle first round pick. There is value at that position, at those positions, in terms of what the Rapids are thinking. I have a very good feeling that the Rapids will be moving up in the draft and to where they're in position to take one of the top seniors who's available in the draft. And then, of course, there's also potential GA players who could be available. And then, look, the Rapids still see value in the draft. And the fact that the draft now has sophomores, juniors, and seniors naturally available, and they're still controlled by the MLS team, even if a sophomore chooses to finish out, play his full junior year, play his full senior year as well. So the Rapids are absolutely going to be scouting younger guys as well, who they think will continue to grow through their college career and then will still have MLS potential after that. So that's really exciting. There's absolutely going to be a Dom Baji level player, I think, that will be available come the 2nd or 3rd round. And of course, I don't know that there's a Moise Bombito player available in terms of a guy being, being sold 18 months later for, $8-9 million, but there will be a starting caliber center back in his second year that's available through the draft as well. So we'll see if the Rapids move up. We'll see what they do from a tinkering standpoint. Do they take a bunch of players that are diamonds in the rough? Do they try to move up to get one of those top players? Even if they do not, listeners, Sam Bassett is the captain of the number 4 ranked Denver Pioneers. He is the best player on that team. He is a senior. He will graduate in the spring if he returns to school in the spring. And from his time in the Rapids Development Academy, he is eligible to be a Rapids homegrown. I would be, unless the Rapids absolutely don't see MLS potential in him, I would be shocked if the Rapids aren't discussing to try and sign him as a homegrown this offseason. Sam is from Colorado. He grew up in Colorado. His brother plays for the team. He's played for DU as well. I think it would be a perfect fit for him to start his career, unless there's a championship team, unless he really wants first team minutes right away, and there's a championship team that can offer him. I don't know what the rules are in terms of a player being eligible for a homegrown deal, and in terms of whether or not they could voluntarily enter the draft, or the MLS team would have to say, hey, we don't want to sign this guy to make him draft eligible. I'm not sure on the rules on that, but I would definitely be looking out in the week leading up to December 20th or whenever it is that DU is out of the playoffs. I do believe they're still in. I think they host Indiana sometime later this week. Let me double check that. The Denver Pioneers on November 30th at 2 p.m. Mountain Time are hosting number 14 Indiana, and then if they were to advance, they would be through to the quarterfinals, and they would be playing that on December 6th. So I don't know that the Rapids are negotiating or that the Rapids would even approach or try to start those conversations formally with Sam prior to his college season being over. I would imagine Sam would want to focus on that. Jamie Frank would certainly want that, and the Rapids would be respectful of that. But whenever that season ends, and let me see when the the finals, the national championship would be on December 16th, so 4 days before the draft. I have to assume that would overlap with the combine. So in any case, sometime between December 16th and December 20th, if it is happening at all, I would imagine between the 16th and between the 20th of December, the Colorado Rapids are announcing that they've signed Sam Bassett to a homegrown deal, or at the very least a academy or a professional, one of the two, a Rapids 2 next pro deal at the absolute minimum. And if the Rapids were to get, I think, the best center senior midfielder in college soccer right now and get nothing but diamonds in the rough and lower tier, non-GA guys, non-seniors who are ready to start in the draft as well, or even underclassmen who we don't see from in a year or two, I would not be shocked at that at all. So that's something to keep in mind. In terms of players from that the Rapids selected last year who could potentially come out of the draft, there is Rosa, the outside back from the University of Central Florida, who went back to school to finish his college degree. He is available to join the Rapids in preseason, so we'll see whether or not that happens. And then there's also the two underclassmen, the striker out of Butler, Alt, and also Stendhoff, the who I guess would be a rising senior. He would be finishing his... No, he'd be a rising senior, I believe, who's at Manhattan College as well. I haven't heard any rumblings out of them. I also know that those were the two players towards the bottom of the draft and were maybe a little bit more developmental. So we'll see whether or not they decide. My hunch would be, just given where they were in the pedigree from a draft standpoint and where they were from a developmental standpoint, given how many years they had left in college, both of those go back. But we will see whether or not Rosa joins the team in preseason. On that note, listeners, I do want to talk schedule release and then also report date for the Rapids, as those are press releases that could come out, you know, while you're on a plane to go ski for the winter, or certainly go join your family for the December holidays. The schedule historically in the last couple of years has been released prior to the Super Draft. I don't know of a reason why it would be delayed this year. And obviously, we'll know on December 10th who the Rapids are playing in the first round of CONCACAF Champions, so I don't think that would be a significant delay. I would be very surprised if we do not get the schedule prior to the end of the calendar year. And then report date. Last year, the Rapids reported on Friday, January 12th. Champions Cup, CONCACAF Champions, will probably have them start their season the Wednesday prior to the week leading in to the MLS regular season. So think about that. First weekend in March, they played on that Saturday at Portland, and then there was that Wednesday, and then go the week prior to that. So that's probably, they're probably going Wednesday, Wednesday, Saturday in terms of two CONCACAF champions in the first round and then MLS play, or unlikely, but possibly Wednesday, first leg CONCACAF champions, Saturday MLS opener, that following Wednesday, second leg of the first round of the CONCACAF champions. So I would imagine that report date is probably moved up slightly. New Year's Eve, New Year's Day is in the middle of the week. That is on a... New Year's Day is on Wednesday, January 1st. So I would imagine the Rapids report date is either that weekend of the 3rd or at the very latest, the start of the following week, January 6th, January 7th. And I would imagine, given how much the clubs just really liked their schedule that they've had, I would guess they're probably going to play at altitude in Mexico and then coming back and going to Orlando to finish out the MLS season. And then Orlando's probably close enough from a weather and a logistics standpoint that they probably go from the camp there in Central Florida just to wherever it is that they're playing in Central America for the first leg. I would guess they're probably, I don't know. They'll be at the top of the second pot, so they might actually be the home team for that first leg in the CONCACAF Champions. So I'm not sure. In any case, they've liked going to Mexico to play at altitude. They've liked going to Orlando to play other MLS and North American teams as well. I do not see a reason why that would change, and we'll probably get that news that first full week of January of the report date and the full preseason schedule, and then you know, all of you and us scouring social media for the club, putting out a random preseason scrimmage goal that, you know, that Calvin Harris scores against the second team from Querétaro or something like that. I think that'll do it for me, listeners. My voice is pretty much gone and my lunch break is over. Let's see if I can edit this thing and get it out on, well, either on the train or while I'm sitting in the terminal on DIA Wi-Fi prior to getting on my Southwest flight to Burbank. You've been listening to Holding the High Line. Follow us on socials. We are officially set up on Threads, on Blue Sky. So follow us on there. We're on Facebook. We're still on the Bird app, X, the application formerly known on Twitter, but we're going to be more active on Threads. We're going to be more active on Blue Sky. We're still on Facebook, obviously. Rate, review, share, subscribe, wherever you get your podcast. And enjoy listening to this episode amid your Thanksgiving travel. Safe travels. Happy Thanksgiving, listeners. Mark and I will see you sometime soon. Peace.